It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Deborah Amos. Over the next few weeks, the country's biggest banks will tell investors how much they earned last year and how much they're handing out in executive bonuses. For the banks, this information comes with political risks. The bonuses are expected to be sizable and will probably add to the anger over last year's bank bailout. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports that bank regulators are now searching for ways to clamp down on those bonuses.
Federal and state law actually gives regulators relatively little authority over how much bankers are paid, but that may be changing.
The public is so mad about the compensation issue that every player out there wants to show they understand that public anger, so they're all pushing forward.
Douglas Elliott of the Brookings Institution says Congress, the Federal Reserve, and the White House are all talking about ways to rein in banker bonuses. Yesterday, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which regulates many of the nation's banks, proposed raising insurance premiums on banks whose compensation practices encourage risky behavior. Elliott says a lot of banks tie an employee's bonuses to the amount of money he or she earned that year, and that gives employees an incentive to take short-term gambles, even if they suspect the strategy may lead to big problems down the road.
Because if you're a trader, all you have to do is have 9 good years, make a lot of money, and then if you get no bonus in the 10th year, it's not that big a deal.
Regulators have proposed several steps to reform the system. They want banks to impose clawback provisions on bonuses. That means employees might be forced to return the money they got if it turns out they did something especially risky. They also want banks to issue more of their bonuses not in cash, but in stock, and require employees to hold on to it for longer periods. The thinking is that traders and bankers will take fewer risks if their personal wealth is tied to their employer's long-term health. Douglas Elliott says many banks have been chastened by the market meltdown and are already doing this on their own.
Look, and I'm speaking as a former banker here, we may be stupid, but we're not that stupid. The crisis really was very bad for the industry and the people in it. And collectively, there's been a lot learned, and that is being reflected in behavior now.
But with Wall Street profits growing again, banks are also under pressure to hire the best employees, and they're doing that by offering big bonuses. One bank official speaking off the record noted that some banks are once again offering guaranteed bonuses. They're promising prospective hires that they'll get their bonus no matter what happens, even if the person ends up losing the bank money. That kind of lavish promise ups the ante for the industry as a whole. The same official said banks are also facing growing competition for the best talent from overseas financial institutions. All of that makes it much harder for banks to actually rein in their compensation, says Jay Brown of the University of Denver Law School.
It's tough to be the one financial institution out there that pays reasonable compensation when everybody else is paying excessive compensation or at least, you know, compensation that looks excessive, relatively speaking. There needs to be somebody that says all of you must be more reasonable about this.
That's what federal regulators like the FDIC are trying to do. But compensation consultant Alan Johnson scoffs at the idea that a bank's fees should be tied to how risky its compensation practices are.
That is about the silliest idea imaginable, that a untrained regulator with 8,000 banks is going to go out and assess the risk of compensation programs. No experience, whatever.
Johnson says it's really hard to figure out whether a specific compensation plan encourages risk, and he's skeptical that regulators are up to the task.
Well, they could hire thousands of people and this and that, but you can't even get experts to agree on what is a risky plan.
But with public anger over last year's bailout growing, regulators are under increasing pressure to rein in bonuses. And over the next few weeks, that pressure is only likely to grow. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
The CEOs from 4 of the biggest banks that got government bailouts are on Capitol Hill today, and they're in for some tough questions. But those questions aren't coming from lawmakers. They're coming from a commission that Congress established with a mandate to conduct the most thorough investigation yet into the causes of the financial crisis. NPR's John Yitzty reports.
These are the first public hearings conducted by the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. It's been compared to the 9/11 Commission, which probed the failures after the attack on the World Trade Center. The Commission Chairman, Phil Angelides, former California State Treasurer, used some evocative language as he described the Commission's task in an interview with NPR.
There's a need for accountability and responsibility, and I think it serves everyone's purpose to get the facts and the truth on the table so that this country can move on.
Angelides, a former Democratic candidate for governor in California, is one of six Democratic appointees to the commission. There are also four Republican appointees. One of them is Douglas Holtz Aiken, a former director of the Congressional Budget Office, who was the top economic advisor to presidential candidate John McCain.
We owe the American people an official version of what happened. This is a national crisis. It's an expensive national endeavor to repair it, and I think people have the right to understand what happened and why.
There are already plenty of explanations for what caused the financial crisis, from unrestrained risk-taking on Wall Street to irresponsible borrowing by homeowners. But Heather Murren, a former Merrill Lynch analyst and another Democratic appointee to the commission, says the cause and effect are not yet completely clear.
Our job is finding the actual facts and also sorting out the things that were most important from the things that perhaps were less important.
The commission has an $8 million budget and has assembled a staff of 35 to investigate and analyze the ocean of data, research, and testimony already compiled on the crisis. It has been tasked by Congress to review 22 separate areas of interest, from fraud and abuse in the financial sector to compensation practices. The commission will gather testimony in hearings, including several panels of witnesses today and tomorrow. And, says Republican appointee, former Congressman Bill Thomas, the commission will be hard to ignore.
We do have the power of the subpoena. We can refer to the Department of Justice. That's not a threat. That's just an understanding on the part of Congress that some people may not be as willing as others.
One other challenge the commission faces is that the Congress is well down the road to a sweeping overhaul of financial regulation. The House has already passed a bill, and the Senate is likely to act before the commission's final report is due in December of this year. But Holtz Aiken believes he and his colleagues can still have an impact.
Financial regulation reform is not a one-shot operation. There will be future reforms in years to come. Even this reform has a timetable that's uncertain. So as they work on legislation this year and we find things, there's no reason why we can't inform the debate and provide some value.
Both Holtz Aiken and Murren express confidence that the commission will not get bogged down in partisanship and that it will be able to reach a high level of agreement on the causes of the financial crisis. John Idstey, NPR News, Washington.
As the federal deficit grows, so does the talk about creating a congressional commission to deal with it. We heard yesterday from Senators Kent Conrad and Judd Gregg, the top Democrat and Republican, on the Senate Budget Committee. They're proposing this commission to make the hard decisions necessary to slash the national debt. But the idea isn't popular with everyone. Dean Baker is an economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., and he joins us in our studios. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
What are your concerns about the creation of a congressional commission?
Well, this seems to me an effort to railroad cuts in Social Security and Medicare, cuts that are extremely unpopular, would never be passed by Congress in ordinary circumstances. It creates this unusual procedure without really any precedent when there's really no call for it. The fact of the matter is we do have serious budget issues, but they're not caused by a reckless Congress. What they're caused by, on the one hand, was a war that, for whatever reason, we've opted not to pay for, or I should say wars, and more importantly, an economic collapse caused by a housing bubble. And it wasn't reckless spending by Congress.
In your opinion, do you think the deficit is bad and must be addressed?
Well, the deficit in 2010 is actually good. We would have a higher unemployment rate. So if I could snap my finger and get rid of the deficit tomorrow without raising anyone's taxes, I wouldn't do it because we would have a more serious downturn than we currently have. In fact, I would actually say at the moment we would like to see a larger deficit. That would help get the unemployment rate down, and that's really a scandal in my view. Now, over the longer term, we absolutely do have a deficit problem, but that comes from exploding health care costs. Our health care system is way more expensive than anyone else's in the world, and that translates into a deficit problem because we pay for roughly half of our health care through the public sector.
We heard from members of the Senate Budget Committee yesterday and the chairman of that committee, Senator Conrad. This is what he had to say about cutting entitlements.
Some have been criticizing us, saying, well, we just want to go out and cut Social Security and Medicare. I would say if they're saying the answer is do nothing, they're the ones that threaten Social Security and Medicare.
And are you suggesting to do nothing or to do some of the trims but not just as much?
Well, I'd say we have a normal congressional process, and there's really no evidence here that it's failed. We could say that we've had failed regulation in allowing the housing bubble to grow and create this collapse, but there really is no evidence that the normal congressional process has failed. Now, should we raise more revenue? I'd like to see us raise more revenue. One of the things I've done some work on is a financial transactions tax, taxing speculation on Wall Street. I think that'd be a really good idea. There are places we can look to cut spending. It's not urgent. I wouldn't really recommend it for 2010, 2011 when the economy is very weak, but further out, absolutely. And again, I would highlight military spending. And then again, over the longer term, as I said, we have to fix health care. Hopefully, President Obama's plan will be a first step in that direction, but there's clearly a lot more that we have to do.
Let me ask you about entitlements, because this seems to be one place where you do get some agreement. One of them raised the retirement age. Another is a means test for benefits, that, you know, someone who retires on $100,000 as opposed to someone who retires on $25,000 actually should pay a little bit for Medicare. Those ideas actually seem to have some majority behind them.
Actually, I'd be very surprised at that. Certainly among economists, I really doubt you'd find that agreement. When you talk about raising the retirement age, certainly when you talk about Social Security, we're looking at a cohort of baby boomers that have just seen most of their wealth destroyed with the collapse of the housing bubble. They have very little to depend on other than their Social Security. And I should point out, most people start collecting benefits at age 62. So raising the retirement age is simply a way of cutting benefits. And since most people have little other than their Social Security to get by on, that would make things even worse for them. When you talk about Medicare, health care expenses, of course, are very high for people age 66, 67. If we were to raise the Medicare eligibility age, that would be a very big difficulty for people in those years. And when you raise the issue of means testing, when you start talking about a realistic means test, you have to start hitting very middle-income people. And again, I don't think that's the sort of thing most people want to do. It's certainly not the sort of thing I've heard many economists advocate.
Most people do want to address the debt. So how would you do it?
As I keep saying, fix health care, fix health care, fix health care. The other part of the story, if we need more revenue, which I think we do, the best place to start is taxing the people that gave us this downturn. A financial transactions tax could raise well over $100 billion a year. I think that's a really good place to start. We may need more, but that's a really good place to start.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Dean Baker is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C.
And the pressure on banks is not limited to their bonuses. The White House is also considering a new tax on banks. Let's bring in David Wessel. He's economics editor of the Wall Street Journal and a regular guest on this program. David, good morning once again.
Good morning, Steve.
He's with us live. What's the administration have in mind?
Well, the administration sees a lot of political pressure to do something about the fact that the banks that were bailed out during the financial crisis seem to be making a lot of money and, as Jim's piece said, seem to be paying big bonuses. So one thing the government can do is take away some of their profits. And what the president is likely to detail tomorrow on Thursday is a tax on banks to recover some of the costs that the government incurred during the bailout, a tax of about maybe as much as $120 billion, because the bailout bill says that the banking system, broadly defined, is supposed to reimburse taxpayers for any costs that the government incurs before 2013.
I guess they're describing it as a fee rather than a tax here, but in any case, it's a big bill for the banks if it goes through, right?
Absolutely.
Why would you do this when the banks are still kind of in control of the situation here? They can pass on the cost to consumers if they want. They can say, hey, we'll make even fewer loans than we've been making, say.
Well, right. So the bank lobby is saying that we will just pass it on to consumers and they'll be worse off. Or they're saying that if the government of the United States taxes U.S. banks, that'll just be unfair because foreign banks will escape. But banks are a ripe target now because they're making money, because we still have very high unemployment. There's a lot of anger at them. And, of course, there's a big deficit hole to fill, and $120 billion would be a down payment on paying it off.
A trillion-dollar deficit at the moment, or more than $1 trillion, $120 billion would help, I suppose. But it sounds like you think this is as much about the politics as it is about the numbers.
Absolutely. I mean, we just see all over Washington all sorts of ways of trying to squeeze some money out of the banks. As Jim's piece said, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is talking about trying to change banks' behavior, by their compensation behavior, by levying a fee on banks that have risky compensation. A number of members of Congress are talking about a tax on bonuses, like the one that has been proposed by the government of the United Kingdom. The International Monetary Fund is investigating whether we could have a global tax on financial transactions to raise money. So it's like everybody hitting at the pinata. There's a lot of money there, and they want to shake it out.
Well, let's remember the argument that was made at the time of the bailout and before, though, David Wessel, when they were rescuing firms. They talked about the problem of moral hazard. Many people spoke about the problem of letting people get away, in a sense, with their own bad financial risks and their own bad use of other people's money. Do you correct that moral hazard if you do impose this $120 billion dollar fee or tax on banks and make sure that they pay some of the costs of cleaning up their own mess?
Well, I think that would probably be one argument for doing this. Of course, the people who actually take the risks aren't necessarily the people who 5 years later are going to have to pay this after-the-facts tax. So I think resolving the moral hazard, the question of encouraging bad behavior by letting people to expect a bailout from the government, is probably best addressed by other things, like the discussion about having a new system where the government could take over a firm like Lehman Brothers or Bear Stearns and decide who gets paid off and who doesn't, the so-called resolution authority that President Obama is asking Congress to give him.
David, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
David Wessel is economics editor of The Wall Street Journal.